Empire of the Suns.
Suns.
Empire of the Suns.
Arizona Sports presents the Empire of the Suns podcast.
Empire of the Suns.
Welcome to the Empire of the Suns podcast. I'm Kevin Zimmerman. Kel Nolson's here as usual, and the only NBA news we have for you is your new favorite slogan is "I'm trying, Jennifer." Thanks, CJ McCollum. That's where we're at this summer.
Jennifer, we're trying really hard to get through the off season. We're doing our best. If you don't know, today at I wish I had the tweet in front of me so I could say like the historic moment at 12:23 p.m. or whatever. CJ was responding to all the hate he's been getting since the KD thing, and then someone replied and said, win a playoff game first or whatever. Her name was Jennifer, and then he replied to said tweet and said, I'm trying, Jennifer, and that is now going to be a meme forever.
Put it on a shirt, name your podcast after it. Yeah. Let's see, what time was it? It's August 15th. 2018, 11:27 a.m. There you go.
Moment in history, folks.
And over here in Suns world, we are going to do something we did last summer, which was redraft 2013. So now we're on 2014. That was TJ Warren, Tyler Ennis, Bogdanovich.
I forgot Tyler Ennis was in this. We were doing the redraft already on email, and I forgot about Tyler Ennis.
We have not completed it yet as of this taping, but we're going to talk about it, and we're probably not going to get to Tyler Ennis, to be honest.
I think for other drafts, we would kind of wait to see how we went about ordering guys, but honestly, once you took Yusuf Nurkic at 6, it was kind of like where this is already like. This
it wasn't that much of a reach.
No.
You could argue.
I wasn't saying that you threw the exercise out the window. I disagree with Nurkic going 6, but at the same time, I don't think there's a humongous argument against it, which is the entire point of this draft really sucks. So even when we get to the Suns at, is it 14 and 18?
Yes.
At 14 and 18, we're going to be talking about like Doug McDermott and Kyle Anderson. So I don't think it really, and the debate is kind of like at a certain point, where does it really matter? I think the more interesting thing is where, of course, like those three guys fall in our discussion. How do you want to go about this? Do you just want to start at the top? Do you want to go through where you think the Suns guys re-rank first?
Yeah, Suns guys.
Suns guys? Okay. That makes sense. We're a Suns podcast, right? So the way that I divvied this up, am I using that right? The word right?
I think so. You haven't really said what you're going to say. Long day, huh?
Oh, my day's just starting, dude. And I'm the one who said it. So the way I divvied this up, I'm going to stick with it, is yeah. I had like a top tier of guys where I was like, these guys are legitimately very, very good. I had four guys, which yeah. is not the average for a draft. There's usually a couple more. And then the more shocking part is where I got into like, these guys are legitimately good NBA players. Like, they might not be near an all-star level, or maybe they can't be the third best player on a championship team, but they're definitely role players, and with how it's only been 4 years, these guys could still have a little bit of changes. I think you with Aaron Gordon is a guy specifically. I had four more guys there, and that's it. So I have eight guys who I think are definitely good NBA players.
Yeah, and then when you get past that, it's like they might not be starters.
Yes, which is where we arrive at TJ Warren. I had TJ Warren in the third group, which are talented scorers who have to either become more efficient at what they do or develop like just a little bit of other skills here and there. I think TJ Warren's like rebounding is something for me where I think I might see the biggest chance of him coming out there. If he comes out this year in this new system we're going to see under Igor and plays better defense, he immediately jumps to the top of this group. But I've got him merged up with Zach LaVine, Jabari Parker, and Andrew Wiggins. And thinking about it more and spending, like, I came up with this list in like 5 or 10 minutes, but spending an hour or two with it, I think I wouldn't even have Jabari there because of his injury history. I would bump him down a little bit.
Yeah.
But then below that, we get to the point where these guys are for sure NBA players. It's just, are they more of 13th men or more 8th men? And I can't really tell. A lot of Kyle Anderson stands out there.
Kyle Anderson, Rodney Hood, who's stock tanked after like the last 2 years, who were like, oh, he's going to have a breakout year. No, it's not going to happen.
He was like the him versus Devin Booker thing after Booker's rookie year was like a real thing people were trying
to do. Is that like
a
Utah?
It's
I'm just going to rag on Jazz fans
in
the podcast.
We know it's a Utah thing, dude. Come on. But in that group, that's where I have Bogdan Bogdanovich as well. We don't have Tyler Ennis there because if you've been struggling to stay on an NBA roster, I'm not going to have you here. I actually have Elfrid Payton in that group, speaking of Suns links, but I think that this is like the very last chance, and then he's probably off this group. But I think the entire point is that no matter how you shake this, it was not a really good draft. And getting TJ Warren at 14 was, or wait, was he 14? Or he was 14, yeah. Getting him at 14 wasn't too bad. It was solid for this draft.
20 point per game scores, like, if you talk about, I think his value is somewhere where Suns fans who are down on him, who understand his flaws are more negative. Like, you might fall into that. I don't know. But, like, the opposite end of the spectrum is Zach LaVine is trying to get paid by the Kings and the Bulls. And you're like, oh, they're not going to match that offer. And they did. So when you look at TJ's contract, when you consider what he is, like, that's a pretty, like, value-wise, he's very good, I think. And that's why, like, I'm fine with the contract, blah, blah, blah. We've been over it a million times. But, yeah, he's like around that number 10 area I think we both agree that he's that borderline like good starter. Obviously, if he became a better rebounder, defender, maybe if he developed into like a decent shooter and could play the four position, then suddenly he's, you know, starting caliber and more than just like crazy scorer guy, not do much else. But yeah, it's... Even after that, when you compare it to this year's draft and what we think of it and what we know of it so far, it just looks very different where there's a lot of quality in those top eight, but drop off. And then after like TJ Warren's tier, there's another pretty significant drop off, I'd say, because you look at some of those names, it's not good. And we know a lot of the outcomes already until you get to like a guy like Bogdan Bogdanovich, who's only had a year and had a pretty good rookie year, but he's older too.
Yeah, I agree. I don't really have anything else to say on TJ. Everyone knows my TJ thoughts and kind of just summarize them with that brief thing I said, where I think if he improves at one thing here or there, he could actually be above that group and a top 10 guy in this draft. He's not quite there for me yet, but he's almost there. Speaking of not being quite there, Tyler Ennis at number 18 when Gary Harris went 19. I talked about that.
People were mad. Suns fans called that right.
I was very angry. I really, out of all the guys in the mid-first round, and this was a draft for Kellen Olson where he loved a lot of guys in this draft that didn't pan out, but Gary Harris was the guy to me that I loved the most after like the top 10 or so. I really wanted the Suns to take him at 14. I really wanted them to take him even more at 18. And they took Tyler Ennis, which really stings because I talked about that group earlier of like the top four guys I have in this draft. I have Gary Harris in there. We heard my disbelief like a bunch of podcasts ago when he wasn't selected for the U.S. select team or whatever it was. People sleep on Gary Harris. He is really good. He has shot 40% from three the past two seasons on like 4.5, 5 attempts a game. There's only a handful of guys who do that. And he does that playing pretty dang good defense on the wing as well. He is a true 3-and-D player. And when you looked past the top 20 players in the league and ranked legitimate 3-and-D wings, he's up there, like in the top 5 or 10, I would guess. He is very, very good. And that is the type of guy, that's the great what-if, though, that we always talk about, because, of course, this in the next draft, the Suns take Devin Booker. Do they take Devin Booker even if they have Gary Harris? Who knows? And I think we both agree we would rather have Devin Booker than Gary Harris.
I was just counting. Out of the 30 first-round picks, like, legit 10 of them aren't even in the NBA anymore, I think. Or are, like, not going to be. Like, unless someone signs Bruno.
Oh, God. I think Bruno might be done. He needs to go.
He might be.
He needs to go overseas and figure it out and then maybe come back in a couple of years. The lucky thing is he's so young that maybe there's just still a chance of that happening. Do you want to kind of go through those groups a bit?
I want to cover just quick Suns at 18.
Oh, who else they had on the board?
Who could be on the board? Like, if we're doing this.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
In our exercise, would Alfred fall? Maybe he wouldn't fall.
Okay, so I've got 12. I think we're like 15 guys off the board for sure. I've got my guys that could be available. I think someone would buy into Dante Exum's potential. I think he would go.
Yeah.
We're looking at the Spencer Dinwiddies, the Shabazz Napier. Shout out to your boy Shabazz.
Yeah.
Doug McDermott. I had Nurkic in this group. Dude needs to be benched.
Hater.
Dude needs to be benched like every 15 games, apparently. It's like, figure it out, man.
You just got to fire him up a little
bit. You just got to get the right coach on him. It's not that difficult. Jerami Grant, Rodney Hood, is it Jordan Clarkson time?
Yeah, that's Jordan Clarkson time.
So, yeah, man, 18 is rough value in a redraft exercise. And then, I mean, 27. I don't think there are 27 NBA players in this draft.
Oof.
Let me count. I did for sure guys that I believe are still NBA players and they're in the NBA. So I've got 4, 8, 12, 24. I've got 24 for sure NBA players.
So we're not going to get to their...
Oh, I forgot Joe Harris. 25.
So we're not going to get to the 50th pick, which the Suns used on Alec Brown, is what you're saying.
Someone was waiting for us to talk about Alec Brown, at least that's one person I know for sure.
Yeah, that's all you're going to get out of us.
Yeah, I'm not, no.
At the top of the draft, though, good stuff.
What a weird draft in terms of second round guys who worked out, too. Like, this is just a dud.
Yeah.
Next time I'm not talking, I'm going to look at, like, the last couple of drafts and count how many guys in the second round worked out. Here are the first 10 picks in the second round. Damian Inglis to the Bucks, he's gone. KJ McDaniel's gone. Joe Harris has worked into a nice, like, ninth or tenth man, but certainly nothing more than that. Cle'Anthony Early, who I believed in so much. I thought Cle'Anthony Early was going to be good.
Poor Knicks.
He's gone. Jarnell Stokes, see you later. Another guy who I think he was, like, very productive in the D-League his first year, I want to say. He was, like, D-League MVP or something, and people were waiting on him and thought he would be good. He's not around. Johnny O'Brien is kind of floating in between rosters a bit. He was on the NAZ Suns for a while. DeAndre Daniels. Don't even remember who that is. Spencer Dinwiddie. A lot of Spencer Dinwiddie love out there for a guy, I believe, who shot, like, 38, 39% last year.
He's, like, a good backup, maybe.
I love Dinwiddie. I've liked him, but it's like people are saying like they'd rather have D'Angelo Russell, and I get that you're trying to like do a negative D'Angelo Russell thing, but
oh yeah, no,
simmer a bit.
He's better than that guy.
Jerami Grant, who is a five position defender, those don't really exist, but good God, there's really nothing else there. Glenn Robinson III, I guess, is an NBA. Is he an NBA player? Right? I mean, he just got a 2-year deal,
so, yeah.
So I think we can count him. But, I mean, we're talking about standout role players, and there aren't any here, just anything like that. Nikola Jokic is a franchise center. He went 41. But after that, here are, like, the relevant NBA names. Dwight Powell, Jordan Clarkson. That's it. I wasn't dramatically pausing there. I was scrolling to the bottom. That's it, man. Giannis's brother, Cameron Bairstow, Lamar Patterson, Russ Smith. It's brutal.
Yeah, I'm looking at it compared to 2013 since we did that already.
Yeah.
And, like, we had This was before Victor Oladipo's breakout years, so take that into account. But we redrafted him at 10 before his great season last year. And then you get down to 24, where it's Matthew Dellavedova, who's like very clearly an NBA player. So, yeah, this draft is a lot worse than the year before it is where I'm getting at here. I'm still going. Michael Carter-Williams is 30th in that.
Okay, I mean...
He's fringe NBA player. So they had 30 NBA players.
So I'm looking at 2012, and I already stopped at 40. Satoransky, NBA player. Jay Crowder, good rotation player. Chris Middleton, Will Barton, I'm at 40. I can just stop. That second round is already like, yes, the other one has Jokic, but that's already better. Mike Scott is still an NBA player. Kyle O'Quinn is a backup NBA center. That draft has some... Shout out Robert Sacre going 60. God bless him.
Oh, my.
Furkan Aldemir, man. Those were the days. Is that the same? That's a different Chris. That's a different Mr. Joseph. That's Chris Joseph. Okay. Draymond Green. Forgot about him. Hey, how you doing? The second round, man. That's brutal. Maybe 2012 was a bit of an aberration, but to me, I usually remember most second rounds as like there's at least five or six guys who kind of slip through the cracks and are pretty solid. And this draft just doesn't have that, and that's where its depth kind of dies. And this grouping of scorers with TJ, how do you think TJ as a player compares to the likes of Wiggins, LaVine, and Parker?
He's not Wiggins level, because Wiggins, as much as you people will crap on him, does multiple things at this point. Who is the other person you mentioned?
LaVine, Parker, Wiggins.
Yeah, I think TJ's right there with LaVine. Parker will be with them in that same area if he like can stay healthy and play. And then, yeah, I think Wiggins is a tier above them. Just like you put him as a starting caliber player on a good team and he would succeed, I think. Minnesota's like that black zone where I can't tell what's happening there, because it's just like I can't inform myself enough about, I guess because I don't watch them very much, about whether Tibbs is brutal on them, if these talented players or guys who look on paper talented should be better than they are. So Wiggins, I'm still like, I'm not ready to just be like, put him in that place whenever anyone writes nationally about Devin Booker and he's like, he's not that good, he's like Andrew Wiggins. Like, I'm not putting Wiggins in that either.
I think the built up frustration of him being a number one pick that was supposed to be something completely different than what he has turned out to be so far factors a lot into where his current evaluation sits, because the defense just isn't there. And that was like the biggest thing for me that I loved about him, was that athletically he seems to, at Kansas at least, it looked like he was really into defense, and it was like, as an athleticism guy, the way he moved laterally, it was all there for him to be a world-class defender. And the biggest thing about him was getting confidence to be a scorer. That was his biggest criticism coming out of school, and now he comes to the league and like, yeah, he has confidence to be like a below average volume scorer, and that's really all he is. His shooting is kind of whatever. His passing's not that good. His defense is not that good. And I think there's a range. I took him at 9 in ours because I believe at a certain point a team would gamble on him.
Yeah.
Speaking of retroactive, looking back at the draft, you know those GIFs where like someone is like falling down the stairs, and it's just like it feels like it's never gonna end. And you're just like, ow, 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 like that really hurts. 25 through 30 in the 2011 NBA draft. Marshawn Brooks, ow. Jordan Hamilton, ow. Juwan Johnson, ow. Norris Cole, ow. Corey Joseph, okay. Pain doesn't really hurt that bad. Now everything hurts way more at the day after and you're extra sore because Jimmy Butler went 30. Oops. That's brutal, man. It's a low-key solid draft, you know? Like, 2011 might be, looking back at, like, is this the best draft since da-da-da? 2011 had Kyrie Irving. Like, sure, it had this train wreck of a middle portion where you go Derek Williams, Enes Kanter, Tristan Thompson, Jonas, Vesely, Biombo, Brandon Knight, Kemba Walker, Klay Thompson, Kawhi Leonard, Nikola Mirotic, Tobias Harris,
yeah,
Vucevic, Reggie Jackson, Jimmy Butler, we mentioned. Isaiah Thomas went 60 in this draft.
Yeah, 2014 is bad.
Yeah, it's
an awful year.
Yeah, you kind of look back on other drafts and you just have to say, if Embiid, I think a lot of it depends on how good Embiid and Jokic are in the next couple of years, because I think we're still looking at projections and potential for them. But man, this is how I broke it down. So I have,
let's jump up to the top, because
yeah,
even Embiid, I think we both agree, would go number one. I know you would say that, and I was going to put that if I chose first, but that's a risk in itself. But that's just, there was no better option. Take the best player, even though his injury history has been pretty terrible.
We both accept how good Nikola Jokic has been in Denver. It's just, he's terrible. He's a terrible rim protector.
Yeah.
And the bottom line is, Embiid and Anthony Davis, in terms of guys who are good on defense and good on offense that are big men, they are the only two guys really that are like very good to good, and they're both fantastic on offense and defense. And Embiid has played less than 100 career games, and he's already, you can say he's like a superstar in this league.
Yeah.
And the question mark is, if his prime ends when he's like 26, how bad is this draft? If we only get 4 years of this level of Embiid, I guess
you might take it.
Is he a type of like Arvydas Sabonis thing, where he's just awesome in his first couple of years, and there's like countless other big men examples of guys who, man, they're this good at 20 whatever in their second season, wait until they get to their fifth season, and then by then like their legs are already gone.
Right.
Jokic might wind up being the best player. If he like has a long NBA career, he might be the best player in this draft. And then you get to Gary Harris and Clint Capella, where that's the next two guys I have. And what do you think is the argument for and against where you rank those guys? Do you put Aaron Gordon in this argument?
I do, just because I feel like I know what Clint Capella's upside is going to be. I think he's closer to it than Aaron Gordon is to his. Like, does Clint Capella going to be like 4 blocks a game? Like, he can only get so much better, I feel like. I don't know if he'll ever add a jumper or whatever, but I feel like Aaron Gordon still has, there's a possibility he becomes like the ultimate like Swiss Army knife number two guy, who's just like really like above average at everything and also an elite defender. I guess if you don't agree with like stock your cupboards full of switchable lanky forwards who are above average athletes, like if you don't agree with that, then maybe you go Capella more, or you go Harris because he's like, the shooting is that important in today's game. But that's kind of why I picked Gordon off the board pretty at 4, where he actually did go.
I don't know how good Clint Capella is when he's not playing with two of the 5 best passers in the world.
Right.
Like, is he useful as a role man offensively? And I think a lot of people are going to say, of course he's still useful, but can you still get enough out of him to be valuable offensively? Because I'm not saying he's not valuable offensively in Houston. He clearly is, but with all the shooting and the spacing and, again, 2 of the 5 best passers
in the
world.
We had this discussion about him as a free agent. If you put him on the Suns of last year, or if you put him on this year's Suns team, if they didn't draft Ayton, and we'll find out with Ayton too, because he's a pretty good rim roller, I would think.
Yeah. I talked about Gary Harris already, so we'll say like Capella, Harris, Gordon, like kind of that top 5. I think the next 3 guys who are for sure like good NBA players in their own ways, Julius Randle I have in this group, but that's just only based on, look, if he does anything to make us take back what we saw in his contract year, which was a lot of increased effort, just a completely new player, then he's way down this list. But he just looked so good last year that it seems like he kind of figured out what he's supposed to
be
doing.
Can I go back
now
and talk about Jokic? Like,
yeah.
If he went 2nd overall, which is where I picked him off the board, that's to the Bucks, where Jabari Parker went. That would be sick, because I feel like with Giannis, that almost compensates for his lack of rim protecting, because you have your small forward or whatever you want to call him taking care of that for the center who won't do it, and then he can shoot, and that stretch to the floor. So, yeah, that would be super fun. Anyway, that's all I have to say about that.
And that's all
continue
I have to
on
say
your
about that. Julius Randle, whatever. Marcus Smart, we wrote about him, talked about him a lot.
He's good.
He's
his flaws.
Good at what he does, has his extreme flaws, but has his extreme goods. He's a top 10 guy in this draft, no matter what. Dario Saric had a playoff series where it was like against Miami, where he was basically proclaiming to all of NBA fandom, like, yo, I'm really good. I'm not just like the fifth best player on this team guy. I'm pretty good. You don't think so? You weren't swayed by it?
No.
Oh. Maybe I'm biased towards Philly. I don't know. But I really like Dario. I think he's legitimately not only like a good NBA player, but has a chance to be pretty good still.
Yeah.
Because he had moments in that playoff series throughout where Simmons was having a game off, Embiid was having a game off, and he stepped up and was like, I'll be the second best player tonight. I don't think he can be the best, but that's not kind of the discussion we're having. Anyone else you can put in that group with him? This is like
who's
Levine,
left?
Warren, no. Parker, Wiggins, Yusuf Nurkic. Give me the Yusuf Nurkic
take.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Go. Go for it.
There's value in having a center who can rebound and score the way he does.
Okay.
It's like, it's my same, like I had him going, what pick was that? Were Boston 8 or 6? Wherever Boston picked. I had him going there, and my excuse there was it's because it's Boston, basically. Like, they had a pretty good team, and they somehow played Jared Solinger a bunch of games, and Tyler Zeller, and probably, I don't know off the top of my head, but probably weren't a terrible defensive team because it's Brad Stevens. So, yeah, like, he's an upgrade there, and he's... In that system, you can make an exception, I think. If it was some other team, like if Orlando or something was picking there, well, that's not a good example either because Vucevic was probably on that team already. So, yeah. But anyway.
No, I think he deserves to kind of be in that group above this next group. I'm going to hand you the list right now, and you can kind of take a look at it. I put together a list of guys who are below the likes of TJ Warren and Parker and Wiggins and just a bunch of guys who are NBA players, but again, the argument for this group was not sure if they're a 13th man, 8th man, 7th man. Maybe they're a starter on a decent team, or like there's a great team and they can be the 5th guy on that team. Anyone on that list kind of stick out to you? I think Bogdan, to me, is the clear guy where if you stick him on a team with the right kind of pieces, kind of like how Clint Capella has been maximized, if you maximize Bogdan, I think he can be your 4th or 5th best player. For me, because I think he's a slept on as a passer too.
Kyle Anderson and McDermott are kind of those guys where it's like they could fit if you have the right pieces around them, but they each have unique skill sets. Hood, like I was confused, like he must not be that good if he couldn't get on the floor on that Cleveland team. But Dante Exum is the guy for the same reason as I had Aaron Gordon high, is I think he's his upside from what he's done so far in his career. There's a lot more to go if he can remain healthy. So that's the guy who kind of stuck out for me.
I like Doug McDermott. I think he's good. I don't think he's overpaid with that contract. It was contract where you're like, whoa, that's money. But for what he is and what Indiana could use on the wing, I like it. I think he has a lot of boxes checked off in terms of what you need for him to be serviceable, to get beyond the fact, yes, he's a great shooter, but what else does he do? Well, he has awesome scoring instincts, obviously, and he works really, really hard all over the floor. And of course, he's going to be a liability as like defensively when you make him defend a wing. Like that's not really what he is. He's more of a stretch four.
Yeah.
And I really like him in that group. Last question before we wrap up. Who are the guys that stick out to you in this draft as someone who you thought was going to be very good and they did not pan out? Because for me, ooh, this draft holds a very special place in my heart. This was the first year I really dove in and scouted and watched a lot of college and all that kind of stuff and really considered myself well-informed on the draft. The first year I fully started writing about it. This, like a month or two before this draft, is when I first started writing about the Suns for Bright Side of the Sun. So I remember having Adrian Payne versus Zach LaVine arguments. Like, it's the first draft where I had those types of relationships where I was trying to convince people that, like, Jordan Adams was going to be a good wing. Is there anyone in this draft who sticks out to you as someone who
James Young.
Oh, man. I was there too, man.
I don't know if I just thinking back, I don't know if I got caught that bug when he was leading them deep into the postseason, but like it was like very fluid wing, smooth shot, like just has to grow into his body. He can probably play defense, I assumed. And then what is he even on the Celtics anymore? He probably got traded at some point, or they just released him. I don't even remember.
That's a bummer, man. There are so many guys in this draft where I felt that way, which is why this draft sucks. Alfred Payton, floor general, defense first dude. The defense, of course, as Suns fans know, didn't work out. Adrian Payne, modern stretch four is what we talked about with him, can play some small ball five for you too.
Classic Michigan State player, Draymond, Jaren Jackson, like, oh yeah, he's going to be an awesome player in the NBA. No.
I guarantee I'm saying this name and you haven't thought about it in at least 2 years. Mitch McGarry. Everyone forgets Mitch McGarry.
Is he still a thing?
He's not still a thing. It would have been really fun to kind of look at all these guys and done like a where are they now kind of deal. But Mitch McGarry was like a playmaking big man who had a little bit of range on his jumper and a lot more athletic than people thought he was. And I
back injury trashed his, I think. It was actually when Arizona was going to play them, I feel like, and he was just done, and then the Thunder, for some reason, picked him, even though it was like back injury, red flag, wasn't that good even before that. Like, he's just like that hustle dude. It was like drafting Nick Collison if he had a serious injury problem.
I learned a lot in this draft from like an evaluation standpoint from PJ Harrison and CJ Wilcox, who were two guys NBA size. Harrison was a little bit more bulky, but Wilcox still like was a little more skinny, but he had like scoring tools. Both guys who could really shoot and had NBA frames, and it goes beyond that a lot. Just because you can shoot and you have an NBA body, there's a lot more that you need to do, and you just have to have the right. It's about feel, and that's something Colswicker and the guys on the Stepien are really obsessed with, is just how guys feel out the game, see out the game. Kenrich Williams is a guy they absolutely adored in this draft because of that. Just a guy you watch over and over again, makes the right play, all that stuff. When you guys don't, and someone like Joe Harris does, that matters. And I didn't really like Joe Harris. I love CJ Wilcox and PJ Harrison, but I kind of ignored the fact that Joe Harris was the do-it-right guy at Virginia. And that bit me there, man. KJ McDaniels, explosive two-way wing.
Not the do-the-right-thing guy.
Clay Anthony Early, I still don't know what happened.
I'm
not ready to talk about Clay Anthony Early until like 2026. I'm not there yet, man.
It might have to do with like he was a power forward who was undersized in college even, and then when he got to the NBA, it's like, oh, you're gonna have to like guard threes and uber athletic twos, and he's like, I can't do that, guys.
I love how I said one guy and I'm reading off this entire draft. Sorry. Like I said, this draft means a lot to me. It really does. Last guy that I'll mention, Glenn Robinson III is part of a very fascinating group of, I think there is a 30 for 30 for that's very niche, don't get me wrong, and I would love it more than anyone. Guys who were top 5, top 10 prospects in high school, guys who at the start of their freshman year, it looked like they were going to be top 5, top 10 picks, and then nothing. Like Trayvon Duval was a guy who was supposed to go in the lottery this year at some points, we thought, and now he goes in the second round and didn't look like much. Avery Bradley is a really good example. Guy was a number one prospect in a loaded high school class and then didn't really turn into much at Texas. Went in the end of the first round, turned into a pretty good NBA guy. Glenn Robinson is another one where he was a guy in that class who was top 5, top 10, and at Michigan it was mixed bag.
Yeah.
I love Nick Stauskas, too. I already passed him, but I was so in on Nick Stauskas, man. This taught me a lot about how much of a problem I have of falling in love with prospects, for sure.
What we've learned here is, I don't know, NBA teams can't see this either. Like, if you could just be like, oh, you want to get Jokic over, 40? One of these guys, then yeah, you'd do it now. So That's how it goes.
And teams, there's often a case like there was a hot little buzz for a little bit that like teams are getting better at drafting, and it's no, they're not at all, not really. And I think you could argue that it's going to be fascinating to see what happens to the, if are we going to have an improvement rate in terms of just where the game is going? Is that going to make players, are we pushing?
I'm going to go a hard no on that.
Exactly. what I'm saying is with the way the NBA is changing and how specific it is now in a lot of different areas, like the space and pace and everything, are we making it more difficult for players to like come into this league through this draft? Because even, dude, even looking at 2015, the 2015 draft, which we'll do next offseason, obviously, with the way we're doing this. Even looking at the top 10, it's like already you got like Jahlil Okafor, Mario Hezonja, Willie Cauley-Stein, Emmanuel Mudiay, Stanley Johnson, Frank Kaminsky, Justice Winslow. And you look at the second round, and I'm looking at the second round right now in terms of guys who are in the NBA. Norman Powell, I mean, who knows? He signed that contract and then fell off the face of the earth. Josh Richardson, for sure, a good player. Montrezl Harrell, and that's it. I'm not kidding. Those are the three guys in the second round of that draft.
Oh, we forgot about Tyler Johnson in this 2014 thing.
Was he undrafted this year? Langston Galloway was one of the undrafted guys, I want to say.
Yes, he was.
Notable undrafted players. Let's see. Yep, Tyler Johnson was in there. So I think Tyler Johnson falls into...
He's top 20 in this somewhere.
Yeah, oh yeah. I think maybe even like top 15. I'm a big fan of his. Jakarr Sampson, the Ware twins, God bless him. Okoro White. David Stockton.
Just got cut by the Kings.
Sean Kilpatrick. Yeah. Tim Frazier, Cristiano Felicio. I thought Felicio was going to be something, and oh boy.
I think Bulls fans still think that.
I think Bulls fans thought that when he like needed playing time, and then he started getting playing time. They're like, oh.
JK.
Yep.
All right. Also today, Devin Booker is on the top 30 of odds to win an MVP. Spoilers probably won't happen.
Yeah, it won't. It won't happen. I can confidently say out loud that Devin Booker is not going to win MVP next year. We've talked about it a ton in the past. There are clear signs that he's going to have a huge fourth year, but at the same time,
you can't win MVP that way.
MVP is only five or six guys every year. He's not there yet. Hopefully, he is in the future. That would be fun, wouldn't it?
It's good to discuss that he's at least getting on the list. I think. Thoughts? No? Okay.
Wait.
Kellen's done with that.
Wait. Wait a second. No, he's in the conversation, which is nice, and I think it shows a certain level of respect towards him, but anything else is kind of...
Yeah.
It's just talk, Kevin. But of course, what are we doing here?
No, Vegas is official, man. You put money on it. It's not talk. It's very official for serious people like me.
We should plug the Phoenix Children's Hospital Giveathon going on right now.
Yeah.
On KTR.com, ArizonaSports.com, you can find a ton of info if you're listening to this on Wednesday or Thursday of this week. Still going on, so you can still donate. It's a really great cause. It's been, I believe, the largest fundraiser for children's hospitals in the country.
Yeah.
It was last year. And obviously, I mean, it's a children's hospital. Can't get much better than that.
It's a pretty good children's hospital.
For helping people out. And yeah, give it a shot in terms of donating, or if you can find out more information if you want to learn more, like I said, on KTR.com or ArizonaSports.com.
On our Twitter feeds everywhere. It's running through mostly toward business hours ending on Thursday, I believe.
Yep. Yeah, my Twitter bio right now, or in my Twitter avatar, is the picture, which is going to take you to more info by default. So there you go.
As always, thank you for listening. Next week, we'll be back. Maybe there will be topics that are, you know, related to the news.